Hi, guys. This is Mike Smith from filmbook.com. Just wanted to let you guys know the episode that you're about to listen to, which is Mike DiCrescio and I's review of The Interview by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, was originally released as episode 2 of the Film Review Podcast, and we referred to it as Film Review Podcast during the episode. However, that's not the case anymore. We're going to be republishing this episode as episode 1 of Film Bookcast. You can listen to that and episode 2 of Film Bookcast, which is our review of Inherent Vice. They should both be available at the same time, so we just wanted to let you guys know if we refer to it as such in the episode, that is no longer correct. So with that said, enjoy. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Film Review Podcast, an official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith, and what you are listening to is the first of what I hope will be many episodes of the new, improved, and easily subscribable Film Review Podcast. Now, I know what you're thinking. Do you really need to listen to another movie review podcast? You're already listening to the Slash Filmcast, the Film Stage Show, Fighting in the War Room, Operation Kino. Your head might explode from all the film knowledge you're gaining. But rest assured that every episode of the Film Review Podcast is dedicated to increasing your understanding of cinema, as well as ours. We'll be analyzing the nitty-gritty, we'll be debating the cultural ramifications of film, and we'll probably be making some sarcastic jokes along the way. Now, the way we're going to format this episode, and likely most episodes hereafter, is this. We'll begin with either some film news and or a general discussion about a particular topic, then move on to a movie review. This week, we'll be reviewing the newest film by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, The Interview. After that, we'll have a brief recommendations section where my co-host and I will discuss some films or other media that we feel people should see. Yes, you heard me right. I do have a co-host. What, you thought you'd just hear me talking to myself this whole time? Come on now, don't be silly. And allow me to introduce my co-host who's here with me today, Mike DiCrescio.
Hello there.
How's it going, Mike?
It's going well. I'm excited to be part of your storied history as a film critic.
Yes, the several months
yes.
that the Film Review Podcast has been going on.
Yes.
Yes.
It's going to be fun.
It's going to be a good time. I'm excited. Are you ready to get started on the very first episode
of
the Film Review Podcast?
This is happening now.
The podcast that we are on.
It's like for real.
Right now.
Whoa. The future is now?
The future is here.
Right now.
Now, yes.
All right.
Okay. Let's move on to film news. So we just have one bit of film news before we're going to talk about something else before we talk about our review, because that's how this works.
We're going to talk about something before we talk about something, and then we talk about what we came here to talk about.
Yep.
Okay. Got it.
All right. So the first bit of film news I wanted to discuss, this happened a few weeks ago, but since this is our first episode, I think we have some leeway.
The holidays. People like haven't been on the internet in at least 45 minutes, so
exactly.
We can talk about stuff from weeks ago.
So the first thing I want to talk about, Star Trek III.
Yes.
The latest film in the Star Trek franchise.
Is there an official title yet, or is it just Star Trek III?
Right, just Star Trek III right now. Okay. I'm sure there will be some kind of nonsense title, like Star Trek Into Darkness or whatever.
What? The Dawn of... The Rising of the Fleet.
Star Trek, The Force Rises
yes.
and Dawns
and
while it awakens.
Whoa, man. That's intense. You crossed franchises there. Good job.
All right. Star Trek 3. This podcast is going swimmingly.
Yes. Everyone's going to love this.
Star Trek 3. Roberto Orci was supposed to be directing Star Trek III. He was already signed on to direct and write the movie.
Correct.
He is no longer doing that. Instead, it's going to be Justin Lin, who is most well known for doing the Fast and the Furious franchise, films such as Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift, Fast and Furious, Fast 5, and Fast and Furious 6.
Man.
So he's a very diverse resume.
Not Fast 7?
He's not doing Fast 7, no.
He's doing Star Trek III instead.
He's doing Star Trek III instead.
Man, it's all coming together.
Yes. It's kind of big news. Roberto Orci has been with the Star Trek franchise since J.J. Abrams' reboot.
Right. He wrote the first two, right?
Co-wrote them with his partner, Alex Kurtzman. And also the second one, I think Damon Lindelof was also involved as well.
Okay.
But, Mike, what's your take on Justin Lin taking over Star Trek III or Roberto Orci leaving Star Trek III?
I guess I'm whatever on Roberto Orci because I don't know him besides he wrote the first two, which I guess is my fault. But... at first, I was really nervous because I was like, okay, so it's the Fast and the Furious dude doing Star Trek. So we're just going to get like a dumb action movie of Star Trek. They're not going to be like really good. And then I remember that's exactly what the first two are. It's just stuff blown up in space for
right.
2 hours. So I'm hoping he adds drifting to the end. What if it's Star Trek 3 dimensional drift.
You just blew my mind.
There it is. You're welcome. That's a Futurama reference also. I just watched that episode.
Okay.
But I hope that happens. Yeah. So I'm okay with it. I think it'll still be, you know, they're summer action movies. So
right.
And he clearly has done that. So
right. I mean,
varying degrees of success.
Justin Lin's a good director. I like him as a director. He also directed, actually, the first paintball episode of Community.
What?
Yes. That's true.
Okay, now I like this guy.
Roberto Orci, not really a fan of him. I mean, this would have been his directorial debut, which would have been interesting to see. But, like, he's written so many terrible blockbusters over the years.
So him and Roland Emmerich are homies, is what you're saying.
they don't know each other, for sure. They could know each other. I don't know their personal lives.
Let's make that official. They're homies now. You heard it here first, Roberto Orci.
But anyway, yes, Roberto Orci wrote the first two Star Trek movies. He also wrote Transformers 1 and 2.
Oh, right.
The Amazing Spider-Man 2, all with his partner Alex Kurtzman. They split up as writing partners recently.
Okay.
Because Kurtzman's supposed to write and direct the spinoff of the Spider-Man movies, Venom. And Roberto Orci was supposedly going to direct Star Trek 3. Now, Roberto Orci's not doing Star Trek 3, and Venom's probably not going to happen.
So they'll be back together next to do Star Trek 4.
To ruin another franchise.
Yeah, can't wait. It's going to be great. Good for them.
But yeah, no, I think Justin Lin doing Star Trek 3 is cool. I think he's a strong director. And it's kind of interesting to see because he left Fast and Furious before they're making the seventh one because he wanted to do something else.
Oh, okay.
And he has been trying to get into another franchise for a while. I remember he had like his own ideas for a Terminator movie. That didn't happen like with him.
All right.
He was also attached to do the new Bourne movie. With Jeremy Renner.
I read about that, yeah. And then Matt Damon was like, nah, I got this.
Yeah, apparently Matt Damon and Paul Greengrass are coming back to do their own Bourne thing.
They're going to do a Jason Bourne one, and then Lin and Renner will be back to do a whatever his character
is. Is that
name
the
was.
Plan?
That, according to the Deadspin.
Deadspin. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I feel like That movie was supposed to come out in, like, 2015, and now it's not anymore.
Yeah, but in the article, they said that they pushed it back because Matt Damon wanted to make another Jason Bourne one first. Because I heard like, oh, they're going to cross them over because, like, the Bourne Legacy takes place concurrently with Bourne Ultimatum, or half concurrently with Bourne Ultimatum.
Right.
So, like, it's established they're in the same universe, obviously. But I don't know. Maybe he'll come back and make... He'll direct the one when they meet and face off Mortal Kombat style. One can only hope.
Yes. But yeah, so it seems like, you know, everything, all this other stuff is being put on hold for Star Trek 3.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm excited. You know,
yeah, I'm pumped. Yeah. I'm pumped. That means, to me, I originally was like, oh, whoa, J.J. Abrams not coming back to do Star Trek. Weird. And then I was like, oh, wait, he's doing Star Wars. So
so that's better.
Yeah,
that's
so that worked out.
More in line for him. Like, he's turned Star Trek into Star Wars already. So it's...
Yeah, a good friend of mine was very upset at the fact that J.J. Abrams was in charge of Star Trek and Star Wars. He was like, you got to pick one, man. You can't do both. This is crap. So at least he's focusing heavily on Star Wars, obviously.
Right. All right. Well, I think we can move on from that story.
Yes.
And talk about the interview. Not the review of the interview, mind you. But we're going to talk about it's been a crazy couple of weeks.
Yeah, some, like, stuff happened. Like, a guy read an email or one or two.
Yeah, so Sony Pictures was hacked a few weeks ago.
Yes.
And all their emails and stuff, it all came out. And people have been, like, reading and discussing their stuff for a while. They were, some stuff about the Spider-Man franchise came out. Some stuff about, like, 21 Jump Street's movies came out. You know, and all the kind of inner workings of Sony have been kind of laid out in the public.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been some interesting stuff there. Not really ethical to read all of that.
That's what I want to ask you. Because I know, like, a couple people on Twitter, like Ryan Johnson and a few other people on Twitter have expressed their opinion that it's, you know, people shouldn't be reporting on this. Like, any news site or company that reports on these things are just, like, feeding into the loop of people are going to hack more things now.
Right.
So what is your opinion? Do you think it's okay to discuss, to report, read, talk about?
I think my opinion on it, probably not the best thing to report on it.
Right.
But since it has been reported on,
let's talk about
I feel
it.
Like we can talk about it.
Yeah, I wasn't in the pool first, but I'll get in.
you know, but so, I mean, there's a lot of stuff. We're not really going to go into a lot of the crazy workings, but there's, like, interesting stuff
some
going
stuff
on in there.
Stuff went down, yeah. I'm excited for it.
So, there was actually a small tangent, but one of them was the idea for a 23 Jump Street.
Yes.
Which
I
would also be, like,
that.
A stealth reboot of Men in Black.
Yes.
And so I think that would be awesome.
I want that. I want that movie to happen.
Like, if Phil Lord and Chris Miller are involved, like, that's the coolest thing of all time.
That would be the best thing ever.
But in any case, the reason that Sony was hacked was because, theoretically, because they are releasing The Interview.
Yes.
Which is about the assassination of Kim Jong-un.
Mm-hmm.
And
the supreme leader of North Korea.
Exactly. And some people are not happy about that.
Yeah, mainly the North Koreans.
Mainly the North Koreans. Well, it's not. I think the U.S. government confirmed it was North Korea, but then it's kind of backtracked.
Well,
it's still not really known who hacked Sony yet.
Right, because it happened. People were putting doubt on it because back in 2011, was it, when the PlayStation Network was hacked and, like,
right.
everyone's information was, like, whatever. That happened right after Sony, like, fired an entire, like, department of net security people. And then all of a sudden their stuff got hacked. And a similar thing happened, like, apparently earlier in the year. They laid off a whole bunch of network security people. And then now all their stuff got hacked again. So they're like, maybe there's, like, a correction. Maybe stuff happened on purpose.
I mean, there could be.
Yeah.
I mean, so it could be a Sony inside. Like, nobody really knows.
Yeah, nothing's for certain.
Was.
But there's evidence that could point to other people.
But, yeah, but it definitely, whoever was hacking posed as, like, North
Correct.
Korea.
That's a great cover story. If I wasn't a North Korean and I was like, I want to do this thing and then blame North Korea, this was the opportunity.
Right. Like, they, like, send an email saying, like, some kind of 9/11 style violence will
happen. And at every theater that shows the interview, North Korea can't, like, even do anything ever. Feed people, so.
Right. But so in any case, Sony, like, put out the theaters, like, we still want to show this movie, but if you guys don't want to show it, that's your prerogative.
You won't be penalized.
Which essentially
puts don't show this movie.
Well, and it kind of put the blame on the theaters, actually.
It did.
In its own way, because then the theaters pulled out, and then suddenly there was nobody to show the movie.
Yeah,
so Sony canceled the entire release of the movie.
Right. I thought that was a pretty good move. Like, you know, we're not going to penalize the theaters. Like, you know, we'll leave it up to you. We want this movie out there, but it's up to you.
Right.
And then I saw, like, 12 hours later, I saw, like, AMC, Lowe's, like, all of the main movie chains
Well, what that did
were not showing it.
What that did was, if something did happen, then Sony wouldn't
be
blamed.
Right.
It would be on the theater.
Exactly.
So that was, like, they're basically, that was covering their own ass.
Yeah. It's a classic
business the theaters
move.
Pulled out.
Yeah. But also, I feel like the whole this is a tragedy for America, or like when Sony decided not to show the film and people were like calling them out on not being patriots. It's like they're a multinational, like, $1 billion company. They have no tie to this country at all, like in terms of patriotism. So I think that was a good or shrewd business move on their part.
Sure.
You know, in terms of liability, like you said.
Right.
They don't want to be held responsible.
Right. But a lot of people did, like, call attention to that as a form of censorship. Like,
yes.
As a form of, like,
correct.
Stifling freedom of expression.
Yes.
And it was a big deal.
It was
for,
a big
like,
deal.
A few
You're
days.
Right.
And then
we negotiated with terrorists.
Exactly. even President Obama, like, was like, I think they made a mistake. They should have released the movie.
Yeah. We've talked about Jeff Cannata had that amazing tweet that was, the U.S. president has an official stance on a stoner comedy. I've seen it all, or something like to that effect.
Yeah.
And I think he's right.
Yeah. No. But so, in any case, a few indie theaters started, like, rallying together, trying to make it happen. The Alamo Drafthouse among them.
But didn't they, like, not do it, or did they actually show it?
They showed it.
Oh, they
theater, okay. About around 300 theaters around the country got Sony to release the movie.
Okay.
On December 24th, I think, or December 25th.
I think it was actually Christmas. No.
It was Christmas Day, and then on December 24th, I woke up.
They put it out online.
And
on
discovered that The Interview was available on video on demand on several different platforms.
Correct.
So that was awesome.
That's great. people were talking about on the Reddits that this could be, like, a great moment for the shift towards streaming, like.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah, this is like
release
a huge
of streaming media. This is great.
Yeah, it's a huge move for video on demand. It's like, you know,
like, who knew you could buy movies on YouTube? Like, that's a thing you can do now, apparently.
Yeah, I mean,
and the Interview told everyone about that.
Yeah,
so
it's like
great.
It's been a thing you can do for a while, and video on demand has been growing. But this has been, like, the biggest. I feel like I read it was the most successful video on demand release ever, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, because it's, like, the only big one.
Yeah,
normally you get, like, the fourth installment in some whatever series, like some kids series. Well, we'll just put it out on demand, whatever. But now we got like the interview.
That's like video on demand is mostly a lot of like direct to video crap or whatever. But also like it's a great place for like indie movies to get distributed.
That's a good point. I forgot about that.
But now with the interview like being released on demand and it being successful, it probably won't make back its budget.
No.
But it is a big thing for video on demand.
Last I heard, it was around 15 to 20 million, I think, in
video on demand sales.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, I mean, that's big.
Yeah, and it'll be 5 days. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah, and it'll be up there for a while. I'm sure they'll release it on DVD.
I assume it'll come out on DVD in the future.
Yeah.
I hope at least, because that would be awesome. That'd be a good F you to whoever did
to
that.
To whoever the hackers were.
Yeah. You'd be like, oh, you know what? Whatever. We're going to put it out on DVD anyway, which is cool. Should we talk about the actual things that were hacked? Do you want to? I feel like we should talk about the Spider-Man things, even if they don't happen.
Do you want to talk about some of the Spider-Man rumors?
Maybe. Yes.
Okay. So there's a few Spider-Man rumors going around. Basically, the hacking basically confirmed what we already knew, which is that Sony has no idea what they're doing with Spider-Man.
Yeah, they're just like, hey, this is a guy that shoots web. We'll make movies every 5 years. That's fun.
So, yeah, that's a lot of different things happening.
Yeah.
One of the one that got the most attention was that Sony had been in contact with Marvel Studios.
Yes. This is what I wanted to talk about.
Right, about lending the character to Marvel for their universe.
For some avenging.
For some, probably using him in like Captain America Civil War.
Right.
Would be the one, because Spider-Man plays a huge role in
Since
Civil
he's
War
like
comic.
The main point of the story arc.
Right. So, that would be really cool. That's not going to happen, probably. Although, I think it's actually this month, Sony's having like some kind of summit to discuss the future of Spider-Man.
That's what I had heard as well.
You never know.
Maybe. I mean, because I think that would be a huge misstep for Sony to not share rights with Marvel for this.
Yeah.
I don't know what the deal would, how that would work for them, but I feel like they could cash in way more.
I'm sure if they kept, like, if Marvel produced the film and they distributed it, that would be probably the way to go.
Right. And even if they gave them just the Spider-Man character, not the Spider-Man universe, you know what I mean? Like, not Venom and all that stuff. They just, Spider-Man's going to fight Ultron. Like, or whatever, you know? I think that would be a great idea, because that should happen.
Yeah, I mean, I would love Spider-Man in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
I'm not crazy about the Amazing Spider-Man movies as they are.
Is, like, Sinister Six and all that stuff still supposed to happen?
As far as I know, Sinister Six is still scheduled for November 2016. Drew Goddard is directing it and writing it. There's no cast right now.
So maybe not.
So, well, theoretically,
it's still 2 years.
Like, theoretically, it's going to contain a lot of the villains from the Amazing Spider-Man movies. So, like, Dane DeHaan is Green Goblin. Did Jamie Foxx die as Electro? I think Electro was still alive at the end of the movie.
Yeah, I think his little battery thing was flashing. So, probably. Who knows?
Ricey fans of the Lizard, theoretically. Yeah. I mean, nobody really knows.
Yeah.
There's been, like, basically nothing about that movie for a long time. And Alex Kurtzman was supposed to direct Venom in 2017. That's looking like, haven't heard anything about that.
Right.
Might not happen. And then Amazing Spider-Man 3 is scheduled for 2018. Originally they had movies planned through 2018. They had Amazing Spider-Man 4 planned for 2018.
Wow.
And then Amazing Spider-Man 2 came out.
Maybe
Amazing Spider-Man 3 should come out in 2018. Try to do those other things. And in addition, they're also talking about a female-led Spider-Man spinoff movie, which would probably be Black Cat. And also the Aunt May movie. There's a movie they're talking about, like an Aunt May origin story, which is like, oh, that's the bottom of the barrel.
Why is Aunt May in Munich? Stop.
But I mean, there are weird ideas floating around. Like one of them was another reboot of Spider-Man in their ideas, which
that was one of the things that I found interesting that came to light in the hacks, apparently, or people knew about and I never heard of the like actual terms of the rights to Spider-Man that Sony has. Because apparently Marvel sold it to them after, if there's no Spider-Man movie made in, was it 10 years or like five or six?
A certain amount of years,
yeah. Yeah, whatever number of years, if there's no Spider-Man movie made,
Marvel
the rights revert back to Marvel.
Yeah.
So that makes a lot of sense, being like, why, we just had a Spider-Man franchise like 6 years ago. Why do we don't need the Amazing Spider-Man. What are you doing? And they're like, oh no, we got to keep the rights, make another movie.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so. That's crazy.
It is. It is a bit bonkers.
Yeah.
And there's other ideas. I mean, one of the ideas that actually sounded really appealing to me was an animated Spider-Man movie that was directed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
What? I want the Lego Spider-Man movie.
The Lego Spider-Man. Yeah. No, Sony obviously has a good relationship with Phil Lord and Chris Miller, and they want them to do a lot of things.
They want them to make all of the movies.
Yeah. I want them to do that as well.
I don't disagree.
Yeah. So, I mean, if that happened, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not disputing that, but it's pretty clear they have no idea what they're doing.
They're just making it up.
Yeah.
So that's the Sony hack.
That is the Sony hack. Are you ready to move on into our review of The Interview?
Yes.
Well, then let's do that. Let's move on into our review of The Interview.
We've been together for 1,000 episodes!
Congratulations on 1,000 hours of being a massive sellout.
What do you mean?
Welcome to Flavortown, bitches.
Keep ruining America. You're the worst.
He's peanut butter and jealous.
What is there to be jealous of?
They hate us because they ain't us.
They don't hate us because they ain't us.
They hate us because they ain't us.
Stop saying that.
Haters gonna hate, and ainers gonna ain't.
That is not an actual thing people say.
Every night, millions of people watch our show.
I just want to cover actual news, not Nicki Minaj's vagina flopping out at the Grammys.
You don't like that brown sugar?
I have nothing to do with brown sugar.
Look at this.
Kim Jong-un wants to do an interview with Dave Skylark?
He's a fan. Look at him. If that ain't a real story, what is?
Okay, let's do it.
We're going to North Korea!
That was from the trailer for The Interview, the newest film by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg. It stars Seth Rogen, James Franco, Randall Park, Diana Bang, and Lizzie Kaplan. And The Interview is about James Franco and Seth Rogen play. Mm-hmm. James Franco is a talk show host. Seth Rogen is his producer. They travel to North Korea to score an interview with Supreme Leader Kim Jong-un. And while they're there, Lizzie Kaplan, playing a CIA agent, asks them to assassinate Kim Jong-un for the U.S., so, Mike.
Yes.
What's your thoughts on The Interview?
I was pleasantly surprised. I expected it to just be really goofy and silly. I mean, which is that's fine. That'd be fun. But it kind of reminded me of, like, a Simpsons episode. This is a really weird analogy, but...
Okay.
In the fact that people of, this is also going to sound really pretentious. People of all intelligence levels can find something really funny about it. Because, like, on the surface, it's just a goofy slapstick stoner thing.
Sure.
But then it's also, like, a serious biting satire of the state of media and, like, all of these things going on in the world right now. And really, it's just, who wants a fake grapefruit, really?
Yeah. Yes, I also really enjoyed The Interview. I'm a big fan of Seth Rogen, his style of humor, and, like, a lot of the movies he's made have just been, like, home runs for me.
Yeah.
This was his second direct movie as a director, along with his partner, Evan Goldberg. Mm-hmm. He directed last year, 2013's This Is the End, which I loved the hell out of. I think that movie is basically perfect.
I'm really glad we watched that right after we watched The Interview.
We did do that. And, yeah, I don't think The Interview was as strong as This Is the End, but I think The Interview continues the trend of... surprisingly gory.
Yes, that's a good point.
Comedy movies that have like some kind of message about like society.
Yeah,
This Is the End was more about religion and about like male friendship. The Interview was about media and it's about North Korea
celebrity culture and all
celebrity
that
culture
things,
North Korea, a lot of things. I think the satire is actually a lot sharper in regards to the media than it is, like, the North Korea stuff, which is kind of just, like...
Which I was sort of ironic in a weird way.
A little bit, yeah. Honestly, it's not that indicting of North Korea.
No.
Like, it obviously makes a lot of points.
I mean, it is indicting because, like, you know, they're the shitty country, but...
but
a country in a shitty situation.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but it focuses much more on the effects of media or the effect that media has on... viewers and stuff
the,
like that.
Like America, like how America is portrayed.
Yeah. Yes. It's interesting how North Korea isn't like the devil in this movie.
Right. The devil would be
Kim Jong-un. Yeah, that's true. But even he isn't, it's not about his like being a war criminal or whatever is going on. It's just about, he's portrayed as an oaf matched only in oafness by James Franco.
Exactly. It's like a perfect kind of pairing together.
Yeah, they're very complimentary.
Yes. I feel like we can't even discuss how they portray Kim Jong-un until we get into spoilers, actually.
Yeah, I know. I was trying not to give a specific example of anything. But I think it was just fun how they're... It's silly, but also they're making, like, Yes. Satirizing him. I don't
yeah.
know.
I think the way Rogan and Goldberg do comedy, actually, like as directors, is really interesting.
Yeah.
Because they film it very cinematically.
It's very over the top.
In both this and This Is the End, like the cinematographer for this movie's name is Brandon Trost.
Okay. Did he also do This Is the End?
He did This Is the End. Okay. And he did Neighbors also. He's worked with Seth Rogen a few
okay,
times.
Okay, yeah. I didn't see Neighbors.
That's a very funny movie. Okay. But he was also the cinematographer of MacGruber.
And, so you love him no matter what.
I'm a big fan of MacGruber.
Yeah.
But he, I think he has a really great approach to comedy that Rogen and Goldberg have capitalized on with their two mm-hmm. movies, which is he films them as if they're like dramatic, like action movies.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's a very good way to describe it.
And I think that adds to the comedy because yes. it's taking it like super seriously.
It's very much.
But then everybody's just making dick jokes.
Oh, man. I've never heard the term honey dick so many times in one movie.
Yes. And, I mean, the chemistry between Seth Rogen and James Franco.
Spot on.
Spot on, as always.
Yeah.
Like, I'm...
They're homies.
They are we obviously good friends. Freaks and Geeks, Pineapple Express, This Is the End, whatever.
Yeah.
What have you. They're pals, and that reflects on screen. They
Definitely.
Have a good presence. I mean, Randall Park as Kim Jong-un. It's perfect.
Killed it.
So
he was
good.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's... I mean, that Randall Park is on Veep.
That's who that was. I Governor knew he looked Jung. Super familiar.
And
he had freestyle, that would have known.
But and when the interview was canceled, a lot of the critics I follow who had seen the movie were saying like it's a shame that the interview was like not going to be released in major theaters
yeah.
because this could have been like a star-making role for him.
This would have been his breakout.
It could have been like huge for him, yeah. And I think it still could be because it got released, obviously.
Yeah, I think it's going to be. He's going to do a lot of stuff.
Yes.
He can upgrade from that. It's like a credit card commercial or something he's in. Have you ever seen that one? He's like playing with his dog. It's really weird.
Okay. And as well as that, Diana Bang is Seth Rogen's love interest in the movie. She's funny.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Lizzie Kaplan as the CIA agent is really,
really funny.
She crushed
it. She's great in everything.
She's really great in all things. But
have you seen Party Down?
I love Party Down.
All right, good.
Yeah, it's a great show. But she's great. You know, all the cast members seem on point. They know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun, like, bit roles for people like... Timothy Simons plays Jonah on Veep.
Yes. Yep.
Just pops up. Like,
you're right.
Yeah. Ben Schwartz, like John Ralphio from Parks and Rec is
is
there.
It for like 32 seconds?
Yeah.
And the guy from Workaholics.
Yes. Yeah, the guy from Workaholics.
I don't remember his
yeah,
name.
So there's a lot of really funny comedy people in here.
Yeah.
For
minutes, which is great.
Yeah.
I think that's a great thing to that Seth Rogen. That's one of the great things I think about Seth Rogen and James Franco is like, you could tell they're like, hey, we're good friends. You want to just like show up this yeah. one day for 45 minutes and I'll put you in the movie? And it works. And they're yeah. always really funny.
Yeah, I thought it was funny. Lizzie Kaplan was finally in a Seth Rogen movie because in Party Down, her character gets a part in a Seth Rogen movie.
That's right.
And then she gets yeah. cut from the movie.
That's
but
so meta.
But she's
man.
In the movie.
She's
man.
In it. She made it.
She made it.
Whoa. That's weird. We've achieved meta-ness.
It's wild, right?
It is.
All right. I think, there's a lot more we want to talk about the interview, but mm-hmm. We probably want to get into spoilers before we do that.
Yes.
So we're going into spoilers for the interview starting right now.
I'm telling the truth, Doc. You got to believe me.
Then tell me, future boy, who's president of the United States in 1985?
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan? The actor? Then who's vice president? Jerry Lewis.
Now, before we start spoilers, Mike, I have one question to ask you.
Yes, what's that?
Do you ever feel like a plastic bag?
Floating in the wind?
Wanting to start again? Do you ever feel so paper thin?
I do, man.
Like a house of cards, one blow from caving in?
Oh, man, cut right to the core of it.
You just gotta ignite the lights and let it shine.
Oh, my God. So, the real hero of... The interview is Katy Perry.
Yes.
She saves the day.
The interview has some of the best uses of music, which I think
it
is...
It does.
That's some of This at the End reflected also.
I was going to say that. It seems that Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg are very conscious of the use of music.
Yes. Particularly like really lame pop songs.
Yeah. But like they're used to such a great comedic effect.
Yes. Yes. And This is the End had... you know, the Backstreet Boys pop up at the
yeah,
end.
Yeah, right.
And that was amazing. And this has Katy Perry's firework used several times during the movie.
Multiple, yeah. A couple times.
Yeah, like that scene where they first use it and just blasting.
In the tank.
And it just starts blasting. firework while they're riding around at the tank. Yeah. And the editing is, like, really quick, and it's like, yeah.
Yeah, they're, I think that's also, like, you know, this, you were saying the cinematography is very reminiscent of serious action drama kind of thing. And yeah. So is the editing. Like, yes. They smash cut, and they do montage of nothing, and it's amazing.
Yes. So, yes, Katy Perry's firework is a comedic highlight in the
yes.
movie.
Yes.
It's used, I think, 3 times.
At least.
So a lot of the celebrity cameos towards the beginning of the movie, while like you see.
Oh yeah, that's right. While they're as Dave on Skylark Tonight.
Right on James Franco's TV show Skylark Tonight, mm-hmm. He like interviews celebrities, and there's a few of them that you get to see. The funniest one was Eminem.
The Eminem one was fucking great.
The Eminem one was really funny. That was like a great couple of minutes.
I've been leaving a what is it like a breadcrumb trail of gayness through my career. Oh man, yes. I'm surprised he agreed to do that. That's really funny for him.
Yeah,
that's great. And the Rob Lowe one with the
hair. Rob Lowe one, which we've seen in a lot of the trailers.
That's another thing I was going to mention. I was kind of nervous going in that, you know, a lot of times in like not so great comedies, the trailer is all of the funny parts.
Yeah,
and I was like, okay. And then it happened with the Rob Lowe thing, and I was like, oh, I've seen it before. And then when he's like doing the training and he sneezes with the poison on his hand and it's stuck on his face.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, this is the same thing. But there's a lot more, like there's a lot more goodness. And I was pleasantly surprised. I was worried.
That's good. I'm glad. Yes. Yeah. I was reading Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg live tweeted the movie like a week ago.
That's awesome.
And they were talking about the Rob Lowe scene when it was on and they were doing it, and they had to add the gross strands of hair onto Rob Lowe's head because mm-hmm. they realized that bald Rob Lowe was still more handsome than most guys.
That's awesome. Oh, man. Now I'm jealous of Rob Lowe.
Naturally.
Obviously. Even more so. Even scrawny arm Rob Lowe.
Even super creepy Rob Lowe.
Super creepy Rob Lowe. I hope he does more things.
Rob Lowe?
Yeah, I mean,
I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, he's gonna be fine. No, that's not what I meant. I just want to see. I want to see him more. Right. Like literally, look at him more. I want him to be in more things, not in like a weird way.
Right. I think he'll be back. I think he is coming back for an episode of Parks and Rec.
Oh, he is.
7.
Okay, I didn't
final
know that,
season.
Because I know he's off the show.
Right. Yeah, he left last season, but I think because the last season they're bringing basically everybody back. Yeah, okay. But yes, and then also there's a couple other. Joseph Gordon-Levitt has a great like.
Oh,
3 seconds.
Yeah, cameo. Just holding a puppy.
Yeah. The puppy at the end of the movie was so great.
Is that puppy?
No, I think it was a different puppy.
That would have been better.
No, I'm saying like the puppy that James Franco like,
gets
carrying around from most of the.
That's so weird. Wasn't that in This in the End too? They got a puppy.
There's a at the end of This in the End. There's a puppy that Seth Rogen's holding.
It's the same puppy, isn't it? I think it is.
Might be. I don't know.
I don't remember. But I remember at the moment we watched this, when that happened in This at the End, I was like, oh, dude, that's got to be one of their dogs. It's got to be like Evan Goldberg's dog or something that they just put in every movie like James Gunn. Apparently, I was reading on the internet that his dog is in all of his movies.
Yeah, he was Cosmo in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right. That's right. See? Thanks, Wikipedia.
Yes. And along with This is the End, the interview makes 2 Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg movies in which James Franco, at the beginning of the movie, recites what's going to happen at the end of the movie.
That's such a weird... Yeah. Like it's such
a weird recurring trait.
Yeah, like, what a weird device to use.
Like, I'm excited... Like, if James Franco's in their next movie, which he probably will be, like, I'm hoping that happens again. I want that to happen all the time.
Yeah. You know what I was actually happy about regarding James Franco? You can't tell he's really stoned throughout the whole movie. Like, I'm sure he is. But there's some time, there's like a few moments, like in Spider-Man 3 when the pie is so good. Like there's some moments where you're like, he's ripped right now.
Yeah.
But he didn't seem that in.
Right. He just seemed like he was dumb.
Yeah. He's just really dumb, which is fine.
All right. So any last thoughts on the interview before we move on to our recommendations section?
People should see it. I think that you should support freedom. And no. I think that, you know, people should see this. It's actually a really good movie. People were talking about that, you know, if you want to squash a movie, the worst thing you, like, the last thing you want to do is tell people not to see it.
Yes, that's true.
That, like, whole Streisand effect thing, where if you try to get something removed from the internet, people will just constantly repost it. They're like, no, you won't succeed at this. And I think it's the same thing with this. People are like, no, nobody's allowed to see this movie. So now more people than ever would have seen it.
That's
are
true.
Going to see it.
It's possible. Yes.
What about you, Mike?
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I enjoyed it a lot. I don't think it's as good as This Is the End, but I think it's a really funny movie. Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg are probably two of the strongest comedic writers and directors like going on right now.
Yeah.
I think Seth Rogen's like a career peak right now. Like, honestly, like, This Is the End, Neighbors, and The Interview are all, like, top-tier Seth Rogen movies, I would say.
Just hopefully there's no more Green Hornets.
Hopefully there's no more Green Hornets. There's no more Your Highnesses for James Franco.
Oh, God, I forgot about Your Highness. Oh, that would be so bad.
All right. So that's our review of The Interview. Let's move on into our recommendations for this first episode. All right, Mike, so here's our recommendations. What do you recommend people watch?
I recommend something that's been kind of got blowed up recently, and I'm sure most people have heard of it at this point, but Black Mirror. So not a new show. Well, newish. I don't know. It's still like a thing right now. It's a BBC show. Just got added to Netflix in the U.S. It is a anthology series akin to Twilight Zone, where every episode totally different. You know, there's common themes, threads, you know, but they're still all at different actors, different everything, and it's freaking crazy. Like, it's super depressing, super enthralling, and I can't stop watching it.
Right.
Except I have stopped watching it. So I've only watched the first two episodes. There's six total, so three per series.
Right. So you can get through pretty fast.
Yeah. It's not like Sherlock, where they're an hour and a half every episode. These are 48 minutes or whatever, like a regular network show.
Yeah.
So if you sat down in one day, you could power through it and then just cry yourself to sleep that night, probably. But the whole thing, it's the whole, you know, premise is like they're all set in the near, not too distant future, somewhere in time and space. No, sorry. It's not mystery, science theater. And they all deal with the effect of technology, like what that might do to humanity.
Mm.
And you should watch it.
Yes, that's been on my list for a while, Black Mirror. It's I've heard really good things, and it all came to Netflix recently. Yeah. Like, it's been on the air for like 2 years or something like that, right?
Yeah, I assume it's along the lines of, what's it called? Sherlock also, you know, where they make a series every 2 years.
Something like that.
Yeah, according to the Wikipedia page, it aired December 4th, 2011 is when the first episode aired.
That's actually a while ago,
Yeah, so that's a long time. So maybe, I mean, BBC, they just make it up as they go, I think. They don't have rules there.
Right. Yeah, so, but now the first two seasons are on Netflix. They just released a Christmas episode as well.
They did. They released a Christmas episode starring, what's his face? John Hamm. It's called White Christmas. I haven't seen it yet because it's aired in the UK, so it's not on Netflix yet.
Right.
But I'm sure if you were dedicated, there's means by which you could find that. But or you could be a good human and wait for it to come to Netflix. Or I wonder if this even airs on, like, PBS or something, like Sherlock does.
It might. Yeah, I'm not really sure about its airing in the U.S.
distribution, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it will now that since there's been such great reception to it here.
True.
They might put the next season up. But it's good. And I was a great quote that I read to you before that I'm going to find again about what since they all deal with technology and what the Black Mirror is. But in the meantime, Mike, you go ahead and give your recommendation, and I'll find it and read it.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, so my recommendation is The One I Love from director Charlie McDowell. This is a movie starring Mark Duplass and Elizabeth Moss, and the rest of the movie doesn't rhyme. Don't worry about that. it's a movie – I don't want to give too much away because it's kind of nuts. But basically, it's about a couple who goes off on a cabin retreat to kind of grow together. They've had some difficulty with their marriage, and they're trying to find themselves, sort of. And anything more than that is, like, heavily spoilery.
Really?
Yes. It's, you don't want to know too much about this movie going
That's in. Every person I've heard talk about it is, don't read or watch anything, just go watch this movie.
Yes. And I don't think the spoiler would necessarily ruin the movie for you, because it's a really strong movie.
But the surprise
is part of the... is part of what you enjoy out of it the first time around. And then I feel like I haven't revisited it yet, but I kind of want to watch it again just to see, like, how, like, if there's any hints towards how it happens or, like, whatever. But it's pretty wild.
Because I wonder how you feel about this. I feel sometimes when you watch a movie that has some crazy twist or reveal or something like that, the first time you watch it, the reveal, like that moment when that happens, is can't be topped.
Sure.
But it, like, not detracts from the rest of the, or distracts from the rest of the movie, where you're just you try to process what just happened, and you miss some stuff.
It's possible. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes that happens. Yeah. I don't know. My official feeling on spoilers is that, you know, I don't want to be spoiled on stuff. Mm-hmm. I like having that feeling of surprise and of excitement, but if a spoiler ruins a movie for you, like, that movie probably isn't that great.
It might not be such a good movie, yeah. That's what I was going to ask.
If there's,
you,
like, a final twist or something that you knew ahead of time and that
not good.
Yeah, then the movie might not be good.
Right.
Like,
it's a good point.
If it only works if you...
The whole thing hinges on this one moment in this plot.
Exactly.
You probably didn't do a good movie.
So, I mean, like, there's great twists. There's great twists, mm-hmm, that work. You know, I've seen Planet of the Apes, like, a bunch of times.
Did you know that at the end?
Were you aware that at the end of Planet of the Apes,
it's the Statue of Liberty, man?
That's so weird.
I wonder what it is like to be a human, or if it's even possible now to not know the end of those movies, like that, or the end of,
right, I mean,
Star Wars. Like, right.
I remember in high school, I knew a guy who had never seen Star Wars, and never watched any of them.
What?
And I forced him to watch the original trilogy.
Okay,
and I gave him my DVD of The Empire Strikes Back, and he came to me the next day and was like, dude,
what?
Darth Vader was Luke's father?
Oh my God, I'm so glad that happened. I'm glad you were able to give that person that experience.
And I was like, how did you not know that?
Yeah, are you alive? Am I imagining you? Because there's no other explanation for this. That's awesome.
Yeah, so that was...
Because I don't know, do you remember that, it was a YouTube video that like blew up a little, probably a year or two ago. The guy... father was watching the original Star Wars trilogy with his daughter, and she's probably like 6 or 7. And that when he says, "I'm your father," and like it's her reaction to it, it's her face, and it's adorable because she's a tiny human, and it's great. But that's like, I understand that. Like, she's 6 or 7. How would she know that already?
Right.
But to make it all the way to high school and not know that,
right,
I find that hard to believe.
It's surprising, but yeah, it's out there. I think most people, like, regardless of having seen the movies or not, like, they would know.
They know that, yeah.
Darth Vader is Luke's father. They know that it's Earth, the end of Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
They know that Snape killed Dumbledore.
Right.
You know.
Dumbledore's gay, obviously. No. Yeah. So, anyway, that's cool. So, good on you for giving that human the joy.
Yeah.
Of
But in any case, we got off subject. The one I love is great.
Oh, yeah. The movie we were recommending.
Yeah. It's so good. Have you seen it yet, Mike?
I have not. I've been meaning to.
It's easily accessible. It's streaming on Netflix now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you can find it on other rental services or DVD. Maybe it's on DVD. I don't know.
I think it might be. I think it is.
So,
yeah, it is.
Yes. So that's my recommendation for the week, the one I love. Super great. Mike, did you find your quote?
I did. I found it. So the guy who writes all of the episodes, Charlie Brooker, he's a columnist for The Guardian and an author, apparently, and all these things that Wikipedia has told me, which this kind of plays into what he's writing about. So I'll just read the passage. Brooker explained the series title to The Guardian, noting, quote, "If technology is a drug, and it does feel like a drug, then what precisely are the side effects? This area between delight and comfort is where Black Mirror, my new drama series, is set. The Black Mirror of the title is the one you'll find on every wall, every desk, and in the palm of every hand, the cold, shiny screen of a TV, monitor, or smartphone." And I feel like that is an awesome premise. Just that one thread to run through six episodes of just the effect that, you know, everyone is now looking at a Black Mirror.
Yes, I agree. I'm going to check that out soon.
Prepare to just weep and be disgusted by everything.
Just curl up in a ball and fall asleep.
Oh, man, what a tough irony to be like, oh, I'm going to watch this thing that critiques technology through technology. I need this to have access to your deep thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that about wraps it up for the very first episode of the Film Review Podcast.
Yes.
So
hopefully we didn't suck.
Hopefully. That's the dream.
Yeah.
All right. So thank you for listening to the Film Review Podcast. I'm Mike Smith. This was Mike DiCrescio.
I'm Mike DiCrescio.
If you're listening to our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, rate it, and take a moment to give us a review. If you'd like to hear more of my thoughts on the interview and other films and TV shows, check out my work at filmbook.com, where I podcast on several different shows, or follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog. You can follow Mike on Twitter at twitter.com/mickdeck.
M-I-C-K-D-E-C-K.
There you go. All right. Thanks for listening, guys, and we hope to keep you around for next time.
Thanks.